Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Hall, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
They came away telling me truly how convicted they were in their feelings of us this year and where we could have really went. And none of it was made up. And so that's why I'm so excited, and it keeps you going, is because we started something. Now, we also went back to, like Ryan said, you're either getting worse or you're getting better. And we're going to hammer that home that we did everything that we did this past year, throw it out the window. It means nothing. Now we're 0-0, and that's the challenge. That's the new challenge. And so we got the foundation. It's getting started. But it hurts, and I'll probably hurt more here in the next couple weeks watching more games, but that's where we want to be.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That is the voice of Matt Nagy. He was named Coach of the Year by the Pro Football Writers Association, and that is a wonderful group of real gentlemen from around the country.
Gentlemen scholars.
Including us.
Some women in there as well.
Yes, yeah. And again, Vic Fangio was named the NFL Assistant of the Year, and he's gone now. Ryan Pace was not named the Executive of the Year. That award went to the Colts' Chris Ballard, a former Bears scout.
Yeah, when you draft two players that were all pro as rookies.
Butkus and
which is what
Sayers.
Chris Ballard did. That's going to put yourself in a position to be named the NFL Executive of the Year. Ryan Pace had a very deserving year as well. The Cody Parkey signing was probably the one thing that may have broken the tie, if there was a tie. Obviously, these are voted on, before the playoffs start. But still, I mean, Cody Parkey did not have a great regular season. That's something that, was not a smart signing. But congratulations to Matt Nagy. I think it's deserving. You could have also looked at Frank Reich. You could have looked at even Bill Belichick again. I think that gets taken for granted. But Matt Nagy was deserving of being the NFL's Coach of the Year because of just the overall impact he made. Everything from game days to the culture throughout the week, throughout the offseason, created an environment that was conducive to winning from the first day of training camp through the last day of the season. And I no arguments there.
Failed to win a playoff game, but again, that's the aforementioned Cody Parkey's issue, right? And that signing really kind of waylaid you.
Yeah, it's been quite a week because you go back and you hear that Matt Nagy, that was Monday, right? That was Monday? And seems like it was a longer ago than that. And
well, it's because they took so long to actually have the news conference. They didn't speak the week after the loss. And, it's interesting, David, because obviously we're later in the week now, but think back to how Matt Nagy looked when we heard him saying what he just said there, the way that he looked during that news conference.
He used the word hurt, and he did look hurt.
He looked like
a guy is going to be shattered for a little while. It's going to stay with him.
Right.
And that's the kind of feeling you frankly hope the Bears return to Bourbon A with. I mean, you want them to feel that pain and use it as fuel. Heading into this offseason, though, I think that you look at their so much got obscured this week in the days following that season-ending news conference by the implication or the of Kareem Hunt becoming a Bear at some point. And I think that's a conversation that's worthwhile to have, was necessary because of the way they entertained it. But that's really something that is down the road. I'd be really stunned if they did anything this offseason in regard to Kareem Hunt, wouldn't you?
Well, I agree with your take on it, which is they were floating a balloon on that one.
Yeah.
They wanted to see what the reaction would be and how severe it would be before they maybe went to ownership, before they really hatched the plan. And the reaction, I thought, kind of made that a little bit of a difficult move.
It wasn't severe, but I would think the backlash was negative, more negative than positive.
Yeah. It was negative.
So I would think that they would want to hold off on that. So I think, Bo, though, that obscures the idea that heading into the offseason and you look at the needs and you look at the way this team will change, and the coaching staff is the first area that has to be addressed, because Vic Fangio, who was the assistant coach of the year, now the head coach of the Broncos, will take with him two coaches from his staff, Brandon Staley and Ed Donatell, and there are going to be five different defensive coaches with that are going to be heading into the opportunity of their careers potentially, because they're going to be coaching a defense that's as good as any in the NFL. But Chuck Pagano, the new defensive coordinator, is going to have some decisions to make in the coming, you know, days and weeks, and that's going to be interesting to follow based on who those people are going to be.
Another reason I like Nagy as the coach of the year, because he stayed in his lane. He concentrated on what he had to do, and he let his assistant coach of the year, Vic Fangio, be kind of co-head coach defense. And then he went out and hired Chuck Pagano. And we heard Ryan Pace tell us that that was his hire. That is a move without ego. Normally, coaches, they have a little bit of territorial in them. They have a little bit of ego to them. They have a little bit of concern about not hiring your replacement. Mm-hmm. None of that with Matt Nagy. He is saying, listen, you know how to do this. You're a leader of men. Go do your job, and I'll do my job, and together we'll win.
That's exactly right.
Kevin broke out laughing when I said you're a leader of men. I really believe that's part of it, Kevin. I think that part of football coaching, part of football teams, is having leaders. I'm talking about, you can't have a successful organization without a leader on the offensive side of the ball, like a really good leader. You look at these teams that are left. You have to have a voice in the room.
Well, it's an interesting point, because and it's not really laughable. I think. But it's also something that's been tested. Well, that's okay.
I was laughing at something unrelated.
You're probably lucky you have your back.
I was listening to a piece of audio for later.
You know, that's though, a tease. The fact that you say that, it challenges the idea that some of these, or the way that some of these NFL teams have gone about doing business. They haven't looked necessarily for the best leader out there. They've looked for the best brain, the most innovative offensive mind, the hottest coordinator, the guy who's going to call the plays. That's not necessarily leadership. That's
good point.
Because you can call a game in a way that, you know, schemes people open and scores points, doesn't make you a great leader. That's going to be the test in Arizona with Cliff Kingsbury.
No question.
That's going to be the test in Green Bay with your guy Matt LaFleur. That's going to be the test with every young, hot offensive coordinator that hasn't been in a leadership role before. That was frankly the question about Matt Nagy a year ago at this time.
I think that the NFL owners have overreacted to what they've seen. I think that it's not unusual that you see that the rules have changed, that offense has become a dominant form in the NFL because of these rule changes. The game has changed, and so you want to try to find – let's be honest. It's Sean McVay. It's not Matt Nagy. But Matt Nagy had some Sean McVay in him, and you want to find that guy. And so the Packers go out and hire a guy a year early. You know, maybe in another year he might be ready for that job, but then they wouldn't be able to get him. So they want to jump on that, and they go get him. And I think the same thing with Cliff Kingsbury. You know, we find a lot of reasons to dismiss him as a coach, but – One of the things that appeals to a team signing him is that he did have some pretty good players that played for him. He couldn't recruit the defensive side of the ball. That is really where that whole program went to hell. And yet they had, you know, Patrick Mahomes did a pretty damn good job when he was there, and look what he's doing in the league. So you're trying to steal a little bit of that, and maybe you're reaching on these guys. And I don't know about the leadership quality.
But you don't know until you get him in your building.
Yeah. And
so
Andy
Reid, leader or thinker?
Andy Reid's a pretty good leader.
But you know that now because he's been a head coach for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know that when you hired him? Probably not.
I remember when Andy Reid was in Green Bay as an assistant, mm-hmm. and the Bears were hiring, was it Dick Turan? And I remember hearing Andy Reid as a name being floated, but he was already headed to Philadelphia. I think if we look back, we'll see that. But I talked to some people about Andy and made some phone calls, and I tried to get a hold of Andy Reid, and I got a call back from the PR staff in Green Bay saying that, you know, Andy respectfully didn't want to talk. You know, basically, he was heading to Philadelphia. He had mm-hmm. had, you know, he knew that he was going there.
And he was hired for his offensive approach because he was the hot coordinator at the time, or the hot
assistant
coach.
And who did he bring with him? He brought Doug Peterson because Doug Peterson was going to be
the guy. Doug Peterson, leader or thinker?
Doug Peterson is a pretty good leader.
Okay, I agree with that.
Yeah.
But I think that when those are the two categories that these guys tend to fall into because, you know, why is Zach Taylor being hired by the Bengals? Okay, because of his great leadership ability or qualities?
Right.
No. Thinker, right? But I think they fall in a different category. Fitzgerald was sought after by the Green Bay Packers and teams in the past several years.
Yes.
Leader.
Yeah.
And that's not a knock of the way that he approaches it, any defensive schematic, approach, whatever. It's because of his leadership ability stands out ahead of everything else. But they are two categories, and they are two very different
But also, appeal to owners. The other element, like as much as we talk about Lovey in Chicago and that team had success and why did they have success? Well, you know, he had an unbelievable advantage of having Olin Krutz in the offensive rooms and having Brian Urlacher in the defensive rooms, both of whom were great teammates. Olin was a great leader on that team. I mean, really was unbelievable as a leader, as you well know. Brian was a different type of leader. He was a kind of generational talent who wanted to be friends with everybody and wanted to reach out and do nice things for everybody. It wasn't, it was more of a leader by his work ethic. But those are great things to have in your locker room.
But you need both. And that's a great example because you need the leader, you need thinkers, you need those two things to come together because had the Bears had that sort of offensive brain, that sort of thinker on that could call plays and be the innovator and all those things, they might have won a Super Bowl.
Sure.
They might have been better under Lovie Smith than they were because he was a great leader and he was a guy that surrounded and the Bears seemed to have guys in that era that were also of that character, you know, of that sort of makeup and that they fit, but they never had the offensive guy that made you think, oh wow, you know, we don't know what the Bears are going to give us this week.
Do you look at Andy Reid and you think about, you know, obviously, we talked about Peterson working for him, Peterson winning a Super Bowl last year, Matt Nagy becoming a coach of the year. Do you look at Andy Reid and think, oh, who does Andy have there? How do I interview Andy's guys? Eric Bieniemy interviewed for 4 jobs this year. Do you know who their quarterback's coach is in Kansas City?
Yeah, it's Mike Kafka.
Yeah.
From the Northwestern former quarterback. Yeah.
I'm just saying, he's in that room. He's talking to those guys. They're putting those plays together. In a couple of years, is he Matt Nagy? Is if you're looking for the young offensive mind, is the kid from St. Rita, Northwestern grad, right? So you got a brain there. You have to. Could that be a guy down the road that is one of these young?
I think so.
Kings, right?
I think so because he has elements of both, and not that you know, just because you work on a certain staff are you going to get hired, but he certainly going to have an opportunity.
That helps a
because
ton.
If they get to the Super Bowl. The tension on him is going to expand. His platform is going to expand. And these young guys getting hired, the 30-something head coaches, that's going to help his career, too.
It's helping everybody.
Yeah.
It's helping them get a chance. But now we haven't seen those guys fall on their face because, you know, Sean McVay's a damn good coach, and he knows what he's doing, and he's got a great brain. Once those guys start falling on their face, maybe things will be a little different. And you would imagine somebody's not going to make it, right? You
not all of them can make it. And you
that's
think it's
right.
going to be in Green Bay?
I think it could be.
Yeah.
And you think it's going to be in Arizona?
I think it could be Arizona before Green Bay.
I think it could be too.
Yeah.
I think we'll see. All right, we're going to bring in the Cubs' new pitching coach next. We're going to talk to Tommy Hotovy and find out how things are going. And Yu Darvish is already in Arizona, and has he talked to him? And what's his health at? Where are we at with all these guys? We'll give you a little hot stove league next to warm you up with some fun pitching talk. With the Cubs' new pitching coach.
And Fergie Jenkins coming in at 8:30.
And Fergie will be joining him shortly thereafter. It's Mullion Hall on the Score.
If you're struggling or if things are going good, no matter what, he's on your team and he's just trying to make you better. He's really good with game planning stuff, pitch sequencing, but he's also good at breaking down video and looking at mechanical stuff. So I think it's going to be huge for us going forward this year. And just having someone that we know has been around and that we can trust and has been part of the team.
Mullion Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the Score. That is the voice of Kyle Hendricks talking about the Cubs' new pitching coach, Tommy Hotovy. And Tommy joins us now. Good morning, Tommy. How are you?
Morning, Tommy.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, nice stuff for a Kyle Hendricks to say. You know, he's the thinking man's pitcher. He knows a lot. He's smart.
Yeah, I guess I picked the right guy to try to brainwash for 4 years. So I think we're in a good place.
So, Tommy, you come into this job and you inherit a veteran starting pitching rotation. I mean, a couple guys, you're only 2 years older than, I think, John Lester and Cole Hamels, so they're almost peers of yours. What is your approach in getting to know these guys, and how many of these guys do you actually know pretty well at this point?
Well, you know, when you talk about guys like John Lester, and Hendricks, you know, John and I played together back in 2012, and John was always a step ahead of me coming up the Red Sox organization. So I've known John for a long time and seen kind of the growth and progression of his career kind of firsthand. And you had a guy like Kyle Hendricks, who I was in camp with, you know, in 14, and then have been working with for the last 4 years in my previous role. So, you know, we have great relationships formed. We've been able to talk everything pitching to things going on off the field and all that. And then you talked about a guy like Cole Hamels, who comes into our situation last year and just kind of, you know, hits his stride and kind of meshes perfectly with our entire staff. So, you know, we feel really good about where we're going into in 2019, especially with the relationships we have, the things we've already been talking about, and what we're able to kind of focus on this offseason heading into next year.
We talk so much about starting pitching and the different styles of different pitchers. What do you have an overall philosophy? Do you have to go after each guy individually? How do you manage your pitching staff?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is understanding one common goal that we want to try to accomplish. And I think all of our guys, to a man, love the internal competition of our starting rotation and being able to be the next man up and continue to pass the torch. And you guys see it, you know, good pitching is contagious. And when you have one good start and it leads into another good start and guys start feeding off each other, I think that's something fun. And having that internal competition between everybody is important. But again, each guy's individually different. We have five or six or seven starters that all have different stuff, have unique repertoire. So we try to tailor everything as individual as possible, especially when it comes to the game planning side of it. But when it comes to who we want to be as a pitching staff and what we want to accomplish, it's really every man, you know, pulling for each other and kind of that next man up philosophy and get everything rolling.
Tommy, I think when people see or hear about, you know, a 37-year-old pitching coach joining the Cubs, they'll think, okay, this is somebody that's going to come, sort of the new age pitching coach immersed in analytics. And then you have your old school guys who you're kind of on the bench and you still kind of focus on mechanics. How do you balance both the mechanics and analytics and use those and apply those to making your pitching staff better?
The way I look at it, no matter how long we're around this game, if we've been in the game for 30 years, if we've been in the game for 2 years, we're never really going to know everything, you know, about pitching. And I promise you, I don't know everything about pitching. But what we do is we balance all of the resources that we have. You know, I've been fortunate enough to play as long as I did and get a chance to taste the big leagues and understand what it's like to put the cleats on and step on that mound. But I also have been able to dig in with the analytics guys and understand what data is trying to tell us. We have guys like Lester Strode, who's been around the organization for 30-plus years, has seen a lot of pitching, a guy that I'm going to work very closely with our pitchers. And another, you know, obviously Mike Porzello, who's such a good game planner, has been around the game a long time. We have an amazing amount of resources on both sides of the game, and I think our biggest goal and my biggest goal is just to make sure that we can balance those two things, because one doesn't supersede the other. They work in tandem and they work together, and that's kind of the approach that we like to take.
It's Mully and Hall on the Score. We're talking to Tommy Hotovy, the Cubs pitching coach. How is Yu Darvish doing? What's his status? And did I not see that he is already in Arizona, right?
Yeah, he's been back and forth. I was able to go see him in Texas earlier in the winter, make a trip out there and see him, and he really does look really good. I think he's physically where he wants to be. He's put on some muscle and kind of getting back to his workouts. You know, anytime you're dealing with an injury and you're trying to get back to play, you focus so much on your arm and what it's feeling like and doing the rehab, and you're not able to do some of the workouts and things that you normally would do on a normal healthy season. So he's been able to get back to those workouts, and he feels great. He's carrying himself great. You know, you always hear the cliche this time of year, heading into spring training, oh, I'm in the best shape of my life. Guys are in the best shape of their life. A lot of that's just because the seasons are so long and such a grind. I think guys forget what feeling good is like. So that's why you hear that so much. But for him, where he is, I think physically and where he is with this throwing program, I think he's right on pace with what he and the training staff feels he should be.
Tommy, one of the reasons the Cubs were third in the league in walks issued was because of the type of year that Tyler Chatwood had, and it was a disappointment. I think there's no way around that. I mean, obviously he came to the Cubs with high expectations and just had one of those seasons. I know you like to ask the question, you know, why? And why did this happen? I don't know if you had enough time to study it yet, but why do you think Tyler Chatwood had the type of year that he had, and how do you fix it?
I think a lot of the, you know, issues, no matter if they're physical, no matter if they're mental, no matter if they're, you know, related to, you know, sequence, anything that comes up during the course of the year, a lot of times you get a lot of stuff thrown at you, whether it's, okay, what's the cause and effect? Is the cause your mechanics are off, so you're doing this, and that's why you're not able to execute, or are you mentally thinking about the wrong things, so now you're, you know, which one leads to the other? I think with the case of Chat, there was a lot thrown at him, and mechanically he was trying to make a ton of adjustments, and then you kind of lose focus of what you're trying to do by executing a pitch, and then you go back the other way and you're trying to worry about what the pitch is doing, and you lose focus on mechanics. So the thing I think we've been trying to do the most with him is just simplifying everything, picking one or two things as the key focus. Let's reset our foundation, our base of what to work off of, and then kind of rebuild up. You know, he had a, you know, trying year, and it's tough to go through that, and it was not for lack of effort. It was not for lack of caring. He busted his butt every single day, and he came to the park trying to get better and trying to improve. Sometimes you just need time away to hit a reset button, reset your foundation, and then kind of build up. And I think he's in a great place right now. He's worked a ton this winter. He's confident. He feels good about where he is coming into camp, and I'm excited to see him when he gets rolling.
You know, so much of pitching, we talk so much about the modern game and how it's become so specialized, and you want guys to you know, basically go around the lineup twice, not even three times anymore. It's crazy sometimes when we watch everyone coming out in the fifth inning, sixth inning, and it seems more pronounced as you get further into the playoffs. How do pitchers feel about that, and are they used to that, and is that a good idea, and what's your philosophy on that idea?
Well, I think we all see the way the game has changed and how analytics have played a role in starters not going quite as deep in the games. But let's not also forget how much better bullpens have gotten and the amount of 95-plus relievers you see in pens. And so I think it's more of a case-to-case basis. And that's where it's really hard for a manager like Joe, who I think handles it really well, is understanding what the numbers are saying, that like, okay, maybe third time through we need to watch it, but also trusting his eyes, trusting what he's seeing with the pitcher, and that communication between myself and the pitcher and Joe, and how he's feeling and progressing. You know, when you look at the landscape of baseball and how starting pitching is being used, we have a chance to kind of be an outlier in that. When you have a John Lester, a Kyle Hendricks, Cole Hamels, Yu Darvish, Quintana, Chatwood, Monty, you know, we have a chance to have maybe four or five guys push 180, 190, 200 innings. And I think in the end, our guys are working 5 days a week, every fifth day to give you 100 plus pitches every outing. And I think when John Lester's in the fifth and the sixth, and he's locked in, he's John Lester, there's not a better pitcher in baseball, and you can say that for, you know, the majority of our staff. So we understand the where the industry is going and where pitching and starting pitching specifically is going, but again, we try to look at it more of a case-to-case basis and push our guys to go as deep as they can.
Tommy, before we let you go, how big a sacrifice was it coming to the Cubs convention this weekend, knowing your Chiefs are playing in Kansas City, hosting the biggest playoff game in franchise history, and how glad are you that Patrick Mahomes turned his back on baseball?
Yeah, pitcher.
You know, it's absolutely. I'll be wearing red no matter where I am this weekend. Especially this is the first AFC Championship I believe ever in Arrowhead Stadium. And I really was contemplating making that trip, but you know, there's going to be plenty of hungry fans, you know, hungrier than me. They're going to want to brave that, you know, -5 degree weather and grind it out and cheer on the Chiefs. And you know, I just growing up in that city and being part of, you know, some really good teams there and then some tough ones too, as I'm sure you guys have experienced. But it's fun and seeing a guy like Patrick Mahomes who grew up in a baseball locker room,
right?
You know, with his dad. It's such a cool story, and for us to get to be in locker rooms and have young kids that get to experience that, it really hits home, and it makes you want to root for that kid even more. So whether I was a Chiefs fan or not, you know, there's kind of a special part in the baseball fan to want a guy like him to be successful.
Does that apply to Jared Goff? His old man was a major league pitcher too.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and it is really cool to see those two, you know, in it and doing well, and you know, it is. There's two major league quarterbacks, or NFL quarterbacks that had major league, you know, fathers, and are really leading two really good teams to hopefully the Super Bowl. So it'd be pretty neat to see how that plays out.
Great stuff, Tommy. Really appreciate
your weekend.
Your time.
Nice talking to you.
Yeah, you too, guys. Thank you.
That's Tommy Hadovy, the new Cubs pitching coach. Let's hope he's not wearing Cardinal red on a Sunday at the Cubs convention, Joe.
There's some red in the Cubs colors. It's all right.
Okay.
Get away with it.
They're all different hues of red, though. You got your Chiefs red, Cub red, Cardinal red. It's all different.
Okay.
Take a look at the chart.
Okay. I'll get the chart out. We're going to bring Fergie Jenkins in, and we'll ask him what went wrong in 69 next.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Berge, a pitch away from his 20th victory. He got it. That's it. Swing and a miss. Strike three. 7 strikeouts for Fergie. There's number 20 of the year for the 6th consecutive year. The famous Cy Young Award winner of the Chicago Cubs has won 20 games, and he'll win more. Beautiful work. No runs, no hits, no errors, nobody left. And look at the handshakes all around from his teammates for Ferguson Jenkins, who for the 22nd time in his career has beaten the Philadelphia Phillies.
Mullion Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We're delighted to welcome Fergie Jenkins into the studio. Cy Young winner. I mean, my God, famous Cub. And you got a new book out. And the book is The 1969 Cubs, Long Remembered, Never Forgotten. And certainly there'll be no forgetting you this weekend. Everybody will be coming in looking for your autograph.
Good morning, Fergie. 50 years. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, you know, it goes by pretty quick. When George Castle and I talked about it, I said, holy smokes, it's been 50 years.
So what happened?
We started getting, yeah, right, what happened? We got older, I lost my hair, my kids are all grown and gone. Yeah.
And Fergie will be signing at the Cubs convention all weekend. He's signing Saturday night at Harry Carey's restaurant, River North, from 6 to 8, and you can order the book by phone at 1-844-FERGIE-1. That's 1-844-337-4431. Or you can just go to the website, www.1969cubs.com.
Beautiful.
Do you like the fan convention? It must feel pretty good to have everybody coming after you.
I enjoy coming back.
Yeah.
I mean, the fans are all different ages. You see grandfathers, husbands, wives that are basically bringing their kids in to be Cub fans. And there's going to be a lot of people in the Sheraton Hotel for sure.
Have you seen how dramatic has the change been in the fan base since the 2016 World Series? I mean, because there's always been this sense of, you know, people say, well, my life is going to be satisfied if the Cubs just win a World Series. Well, you know what? They won a World Series, but there's still an element of Cub fan base that is not satisfied.
They've been in the playoffs the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Which has been good, but they got outplayed last year by Milwaukee, as you know. And they need to strengthen their pitching, both front end and back end. That's starting pitching and also in the bullpen. And I think that they've got the defense and the hitting that can get them right back to that division again.
Fergie, you literally wrote the book on it. What when you look back on your time in Chicago and you look at what went on in 69 and you look at the Cubs now, the field hasn't really changed. Everything around it has changed, but there are still some elements that a pitcher has to know about Wrigley Field. What are they?
Well, there's the wind factor. The ballpark is somewhat smaller now. They brought down the left and right field line. They put in three or four sections of seats, so you can't catch foul balls anymore.
Mm.
And you couldn't catch down the lines anyhow out towards the outfield. But now they've closed in some of the seating area. There's no bullpen. They put seats there. Other than that, as a pitcher, hitter to hitter, inning to inning, you have to understand you can't lose track of what you're trying to accomplish. And that's to get ahead of the hitter, make them hit the ball, or if you're that good a pitcher, you can strike people out too. But I think the nice thing about it is that you got to pitch sometimes a contact. There's some ball clubs you're going to overpower too. But the biggest thing is you have to know the hitters. And you and the catcher, you work so closely together that he understands what you're trying to accomplish and the players that play behind you. Glenn Beckard, Kessinger, Sano, Banks, the guys that were in the infield for me, they did a great job. And Randy Hundley.
So we just talked to the Cubs' new 37-year-old pitching coach, Tommy Hotovy, and he's going to be inheriting a veteran staff that has guys who, two of them are only 2 years younger than he is. If you run into him this weekend at the Cubs convention, what advice would you give the young pitching coach for the Cubs?
Well, the biggest thing is you want to listen to what they're trying to accomplish too. But he's got an idea. He's going to have a young staff. He might even see players coming up from AA or AAA. So he knows their mannerisms. He knows their habits, which is a good thing. But a young pitching coach, it can be shocking sometimes to understand that Wrigley Field is unforgiving. Believe me. You might have a secure lead by the seventh inning, and then boom, a walk, a double, a home run. Now the game's tied. And it can happen quick. I've seen it done before because of the fact that the ballpark is small. And you can't afford to give up that extra base hit. You can't afford to walk people.
Who were your favorite teammates and why?
Well, I roomed with Ernie Banks the last series he played. What a super guy. Never talked about himself. Always what we can do to help the ball club. Billy Williams, we hunted and fished together. Ron Santo. Glenn Beckard was my best man at my wedding.
Wow.
I've known Glenn Beckard over almost 55 years. We met in the minor leagues when he was playing triple A. I think it was in I'm trying to think of the city. I was in Arkansas at the time, and he was in AAA for the Red Sox. But Glenn and I were still buddies. He won't make it right now. He's had a little bit of a problem. He lives in Florida. But so many of the guys, Kessinger, because we become a family after a while.
Sure.
Randy Hundley and I caught most in one games together. Spanky, Al Spangler. We've lost 16 players off that 69 ball club. You know, the last two fellas that unfortunately won't be with us, Jim Hickman and Bill Hands. And that 69 team, Bill Hands won 20 games.
Hmm.
So there were some guys that, Kenny Holzman too, he lives in St. Louis. But guys, we played together, we won together. And unfortunately, the Mets were a little stronger that last 3.5-4 weeks.
As you wrote the book, The 1969 Cubs, Long Remembered, Never Forgotten, what was your favorite part about either researching it or talking to people? What will stand out as the most fun of that process?
Well, opening day when Willie Smith hit the home run, we were playing the Phillies. I had a 5-2 lead, and I walked a guy, and then I gave up a hit to Cookie Rojas.
Huh.
And Don Money hit a 3-run homer that went into the bleachers. Tie the ball game. Phil Regan came in, and then Phil Regan got the win when Willie Smith hit the home run. But, you know, and then playing through the All-Star break, that team stayed. We stayed in first place almost 5.5 months.
And then the Miracle Mets.
It was fun coming to the park, believe me.
Oh, I mean, it was unbelievable. And then, you know, there's the Black Cat and the Miracle Mets.
Yeah, that was in August.
Do you believe when you look at it that it was baseball and sunshine? It was that you got worn out by playing so many day games?
You know, I try to let people know in the book that day baseball didn't hurt us. What happened is that last 3 weeks, as I was saying, we got plenty of hits. We didn't score runs. We lose 3-2, 2-1, 1-0. We got outplayed sometimes. Our defense was a little shaky. But other than that, the players went out there every day to play. And we had a great skipper, Leo DeRocher.
Sure.
He wasn't changing the lineup. You know, it started with Kessinger, Beckard, Williams, Sano, Banks, all the way down, Hickman, and then Hundley. But we had a great defensive ball club, but we were a little bit, like I said, shaky. Two of the best clutch hitters on the team were Williams and Hickman. And we got hits, just didn't score enough runs.
When you're around Wrigley Field, whether it's inside the ballpark or certainly around the neighborhood, it's changed so much. Oh, what goes through your head? I mean, obviously there's an element of nostalgia, but so much is different than it used to be.
Well, there's older buildings, service stations. Now it's Wrigleyville. Now there are bars, clothing stores. I mean, the brand hotel there The landscape has totally changed.
Yeah.
I've been in the locker room like three times. It's
unbelievable.
30,000 square feet.
They have
cafeteria, they have a theater. Yeah. I mean, it's a great clubhouse. I mean, young players really should understand that what the ball club is doing for you is something excellent, which is something that these young guys, I don't think they really grasp it sometimes, but we didn't have a clubhouse like that. We had one room and a shower room. That was it. And two, and we had a six nozzles that only three worked. Our clubhouse, now the ground crew have our area that we were in. But, I mean, it's a real small area. The Bears used to dress in our dressing room.
Oh, I know.
They played in Wrigley Field. How can 45 guys have a tough time dressing?
Do you know, Doug Buffone used to tell us that they would play Green Bay and George Halas would be screaming at the players and then he'd stop and then you could hear Lombardi screaming at his players, and then he'd stop and then George would go again. They couldn't talk to their players when the other guy was talking because there was too much racket. I mean, think about that.
It was a small area. You know, I tell a story all the time. In Wrigley Field, the bullpen is down the left field line. You can actually, I had rabbit ears. You can actually hear that phone ring when they got to get the bullpen up because they would tell whoever the pitching coach was at the time. It could have been Robin Roberts or Joe Becker. They'd phone down. You could actually hear that bullpen phone ring. I said, not time to just gear it up a little bit, a little more, baby, because I don't want the bullpen to come in.
Exactly. And now
I can't hear it ring.
And now you can't even see them warming up anymore.
No, they got TVs in the dugout, TVs in the bullpen.
They're dancing back there.
Oh, yeah. When the guys hit home runs, they're dancing, jumping around. But it's all changed now. Baseball, I mean, it's for the good.
What do you make of the trend toward bullpenning and using guys? You see it in the postseason. Extreme examples, you start game with relief pitchers, and then guys go to them after one batter or two innings. What do you think of that trend?
Well, there's sometimes the starting pitcher maybe has a problem in the first inning. So now you're putting the bullpen out there, a guy that can get people out quick, and then it changes. But, you know, the Oakland started that. The Tony La Russa, he pitched three relief pitchers, and they threw a no-hitter. This is like 10, 12 years ago when he was in Oakland. He used Raleigh Fingers and a couple other guys. They threw a nine-inning no-hitter. Three guys out of the bullpen, three innings apiece. But it the game, to me, if you understand it good enough, especially management, you got to give credit to the starting pitcher. That's his job. Go out there, secure the team, try to give up as few runs as possible in six or seven innings, because you only throw 100 pitches now or less. Your day's done. And then you put it in line with the bullpen. When I joined the ball club, the Phillies, in the 60s, four starters, five in the bullpen. Now you got nine guys in the bullpen.
Right.
And five starters.
It's fascinating to me, Fergie, when you talk about pitchers, obviously, there are injuries, there are concerns you have to get over. But mentally, we've seen guys that have kind of melted down for whatever reason. How do you balance – how do you stay physically – capable of doing your job and mentally strong enough to get through it? Because that's self-doubt is a killer, and we saw a little bit of it last year.
Sure. You got to be short-memoried.
Yeah.
Hey, you give up hits, home runs, it's over. The inning's over. Hey, start clean again. I mean, if you give up runs, now you're waiting for your team to go out there and try to tie the ball game up. But short-memoried was something that I was taught by Robin Roberts. You can't dwell on that last inning, that last hitter. You got to stay positive because – you're trying to win a ball game, and it takes nine innings to win a ball game. That's why I said, if you got a lead going into the seventh or eighth inning, and I completed quite a few ball games in Wrigley Field, you can't let the game get away from you. And I think the young pitchers, they soon enough learn that. Wrigley Field is a ballpark that's unforgiving. When you make the mistakes, you get punished.
Is your next book going to be on the your time with the Harlem Globetrotters?
Yeah. Oh, I could write a book on them. The three
How
seasons
much fun was
I played
that?
For them.
Three seasons?
Wow.
67, 8, and 9 with Meadowlark, Curley, Jackie Jackson, Showboat Hall, Geese Osby. You name the guys, Leon Hilliard. I played with them all. These guys were incredible entertainers, plus great basketball players.
Fergie, you look like you could still hoop.
Yeah, you look pretty good, Fergie.
From time to time, I'll get out and bounce a ball. But other than that, can't jump anymore. Too old now.
Well, you look great for yourself. Fergie, thanks a ton. Really appreciate you coming
Pleasure.
In. And again, the name of the book is The 1969 Cubs, Long Remembered, Never Forgotten. And you can go see Fergie at the Cubs convention all weekend. He's also going to be signing, doing a book signing Saturday night at Harry Carey's restaurant in River North, 6 to 8 p.m. And again, the number is 1-844-FERGIE-1. That is 1-844-337-4333-RUN. Or just go to www.1969cubs.com. Fergie, thanks a ton.
Thanks for being here, Fergie.
You guys. Great to see you. Thanks for having me on.
Have a great weekend.
God bless you. We are going to come back and talk to Dan and Connor next. It's Mully and Hall on The Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.